The Russians are coming, 1962. Teachers never told us which was which, arrival of the dreaded commies or the 10-minute air raid drill. So when sirens pierced air, we needed to clap hands to ears. But no time to wait out the awful noise, no time to kneel for yet another prayer. The Soviet Union would not burn us all with nuclear weapons, or at least take over our country before we could grow up, go to high school. My parents couldn't afford a bomb shelter, but someone decided I lived close enough to get home, even if blasted to kingdom come before reaching our basement finishing line. It was as if someone fired a starting pistol, although this was no foot race, but a terrified takeoff from the elementary classroom. At breakneck speed, bobby socks bunching around, ankles nearly tripping over scuffed saddle shoes. So, legs separating like giant scissors, I ran a marathon. Dashed past the sliding board, did a relay around the teeter-totter, hurdled railroad tracks, sprinted back alleys, jumped ditches, rounded the second suburban block, would not think to wonder until decades and decades later why my entire class didn't form our own track team.
Thank you. You know, Judy, when I read your book, and I've got to tell you, when I see the word Lenin, it just makes the hair on the back of my neck bristle. My ethnic background is from Latvia. So the first time I got a look at the Soviet Union was at age 15, traveling over there. What a different world that was.
Yes, it was.
It taught me a lot about where I live now in the United States to look at the differences. Mm-hmm. So I read your book with great interest, and I could identify with a lot of things that you described, the intourist, the walking between chalk lines and being approached because you're writing something or you're holding a camera or, you know, a lot of that. I could really relate. But your ethnic background is what?
It's actually Dutch. Uh-huh. I simply fell in love with Russian culture when I was in high school. And I first read Robert Massey's Nicholas and Alexandra. Mm-hmm. And then in the early 80s, I made my first trip to the Soviet Union when Brezhnev was president. So, and then continued to go every year or two after that.
20 times?
23 times.
23 actually. Now.
23, yeah. Going on 24 this summer.
Do you go like once every year?
I try to go once every year, if I can more.
So what is your fascination? Why are you going there instead of looking into your Dutch background?
I don't know. I've looked into my Dutch background, and it's interesting. And, you know, I grow tulips. I love tulips. But there's something about the Russian, the history, the culture, the architecture, the literature, the folk tales. It's, I think, the most beautiful place in the world for me. And I'm including my own country in that, I'm sorry. But I just, I absolutely love the golden bubbles of the cupolas and the spires and, the food and the dancing. And there's just really nothing I don't like about it except trying to learn to conjugate verbs.
So how well have you gotten to learn the language?
Well, unfortunately, I started studying Russian when I was about in my late 30s. Mm-hmm. So I had long passed my peak in terms of learning a foreign language, so I'm not very good. But I get around, and I usually know enough to get myself in lots of trouble.
What kind of differences have you observed in 23 trips? Your first trip was when? What?
My first trip
Soviet
was in
years,
1982.
Yes. Okay.
And what had happened then is that I traveled over there a lot during Perestroika and Glasnost, and then right when the 90s were, right when before it got really bad in terms of the new Soviet Union and the new Russia and all the crime, I went to graduate school. And so I stopped traveling, and I did not travel again until 2008. So during that decade and a half, everything changed. And so my trip in 2008 was mainly me walking around with my mouth hanging open.
Mm.
And I was in shock. I could not believe that any country could have turned itself in so much, so quickly, in that amount of time. There was just everything I loved about it was still there,
mm-hmm.
but sort of spruced up, I should say. And also anything that you would have, I remember my first few trips there, you couldn't find any place to get anything to eat or coffee or anything. I didn't want fast food restaurants, but a coffee shop. Now it's the opposite. It's, you know, TGI Fridays is on every corner, Taco Bell, Arby's, Burger King. I went to the first McDonald's that ever opened in Moscow purely for research. And stood in line for 3.5 hours. And now I believe there are over 5,000 McDonald's in Moscow.
For 3.5 hours. That's one of the things that I remember about the Soviet Union, too, is lines.
The lines.
You'd have
yes.
to wait and wait and wait. And the interesting thing was, and at that point, I've been to Russia just once, Moscow, Leningrad. Spent most of my time in mm-hmm. what was then Soviet Latvia. But I'm sure there weren't all that many differences in how people lived and coped. And one of the things about the lines was you see a long line, you just stand in
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And you don't know what's there.
Even as a tourist, I started doing it. I was there too much, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I would see a line and I would immediately get in it and then worry about what the line was for. And
you figured it was something you needed.
Yeah. The only lines I see now over there are lines like to get into the Hermitage.
Mm.
You still see Russians in line for museums.
Yeah.
They'll stand in line for hours to get into an art museum.
A whole different patience than
mm-hmm.
we have here.
Yeah.
When you spend time over there, how has that, I assume it has, maybe just from my own experience, how has that changed your view of the United States? How do you see this side of the ocean now that you've gotten to know that one so well?
Yeah. Well, it was an incredible experience. It was an eye-opener for me the first time I went because I had grown up with this Cold War mentality. And I also, in school, we were constantly told that the Russians were coming. The Soviets were going to take over our country. And I believed that. And they were awful, evil people. And so I went mainly for the culture, the history, and the architecture, and got over there and found out that the people were wonderful, and they were like us, and they feared us the way we feared them. They had their own propaganda like we had our own propaganda. And so I was really disillusioned about my own country for a time through subsequent years, when things would come up, it always seemed like that was always the Russians were always the bad guys. And it's always something, you know. Right now we're going through something again, but it would.
Well, I was going to ask you your views on that, too, what we're seeing right now.
I don't know a lot, as much as I would like to know, about Soviet or Russian politics. I get a very mixed feeling when I'm over there. People who like Putin, people who make fun of Putin, people who the last time or two I was there, some people who were terrified of Donald Trump, other people who thought, oh, maybe he'll be okay, maybe he'll be a good thing. And so
you could say that about us over here.
Yeah, so it really isn't that much different. And again, one thing I have learned is like I have to judge the government one way and the Russian people the other way.
Talk about this book and this collection. Is it 40 poems or 40 pages?
I think it's about 40 pages. A few of them are two, or it's actually a little bit more than 40 pages. I forget exactly how many poems are in it, but it's considered a chapbook, so it's not a full-length book.
Mm-hmm.
And it came together over the course of decades, actually. The last few poems that I finished in a rewrite for the publisher were based on my last visit there, when I was staying over there to do research. I've written other books, and I'm fiction and poetry mm-hmm. on Russia. So then I added some to it, and so now they jump around from Baba Yaga to actually, I think I have a couple of in here about former Soviet republics, like the experience of going to Armenia during the Soviet period, the Ukraine, and then some of the really bad times in the early 90s when there were tent cities outside the Kremlin and homeless people, which you never saw before that. You never saw homeless people.
There's a poem in there called The Amber Room. And in fact, you have, a previous book.
Yeah, I have an entire full-length yeah. poetry book. It's called Looking for the Amber Room. And it starts with Amber's origins, millions, tens of millions of years ago. And it goes through this mystery from the time the Amber Room was created through its gifting to Russia, its development by Elizabeth and then the Empress Catherine the Great, and then its theft during World War II, all of the theories about what might have happened to it. I did poems from different points of view about, you know, people looking for it and things like that. So, and that was my sabbatical project in 2008, and I remember I was in such fear. I wanted them to find it, but I was in such fear they'd find it before the book was done. And then I would know. I wouldn't have all these theories anymore. I would know the truth, which I still hope I do.
So an entire room made out of amber.
Yeah. Hundreds of shades and hues of amber.
Yeah, yeah. If you know amber at all, and Latvians, I think, all have chests full of it.
Yeah.
Anybody along the Baltic
yeah.
Sea, it's a beautiful gem, and it does come in so many variations of colors. When you wanted to get to know Russia, was a big part of that getting to know their literature, their poetry?
Not in the beginning. That came later. I had been traveling over there for quite some time. I was getting frustrated. I had been a literature major, and I was frustrated with not being able to speak to the people. So I started out really reading more. I went back to school to get another degree in Russian studies. And I became very enamored of the literature, much more so than I had before. I hadn't really been introduced to Russian literature as an English major. And that happened when I went back as a Russian major. And then I discovered all these wonderful poets. Besides the fiction writers, I mean, I knew something about Chekhov and mm-hmm. Dostoevsky, but I didn't know Anna Akhmatova or Maria Svetaeva or mm-hmm. Bloch or Mayakovsky or all these other people. And so now for me, it's very exciting to be able to share with my students some of this literature. I don't know if I should say this on the air, but my old mentor, one of my Russian professors, used to tell me, Russian literature is better than sex.
Well, we're not going to debate
that. I don't know if she feels that way anymore, and we could debate that, but it's exciting.
Talk about some of your favorite travel, maybe not favorite, but more interesting travel stories.
Of being over there. I think there are so many. I think the most amazing ones to me were when people sort of adopted me or took me in hand. I would get on a bus. I remember one time back in the 80s getting on a bus, and I was going the wrong way. I didn't know where I was going. I couldn't speak a word of the language at that time. And these young men tried to figure out for me where I was going on the map, and they didn't speak any English, and they took me on a different bus, transferred me, took me to where I was going. And I had somebody, a gal, I stopped by the subway station one day and asked for directions. And she couldn't explain it. It was very confusing where I was going because I was on a river, and the Volga River, or the Neva River, just curls all over. And she put me in a car and took me there. She hailed a car, just a private car, and took me all the way there and then walked me all the way to where I was going. You know, those kinds of experiences that really stick out for me.
Your thoughts on, as you said, right now we're talking a lot about our relationship with Russia and our relationship with Putin.
Well, I think that Americans love to detest Putin, and I'm not saying that they're wrong about it. He's a very powerful man, but he also operates under a different system. A system in which he can sign all these executive orders all of the time that we didn't used to be able to do anyway. And so I don't think he's really hated there the way he is here. And I don't know. I think there are some parallels between he and Donald Trump. I don't know that I would pretend to be the most informed person about getting into those, but I do seem to see some sort of tyrannical or autocratic similarities between the two, and put it that way. And I'm anxious to go there this year and see what the Russians think now that he's been elected.
Yeah, I'd be interested. Yeah. You'll have to come back and tell us.
I'll have to give you a full report, yeah.
Do you ever do any readings there of your poetry?
I have, yes. I've been very, very fortunate with the Looking for the Amber Room book because I was given the opportunity to read at the Catherine Palace, which is where the recreated Amber Room is, to the curators, some of whom had worked on the Amber Room recreation. And then I also read to a group of historians, the Russian historians at a museum, and they were so excited, and they would get up and say, they would question everything. It was the most exciting poetry reading I've ever had because they would say, well, how do you know Molotov's voice was gruff when he was coming over the speakers after the war began? And, you know, and they started arguing with each other. So there was this tremendous and intelligent conversation going on. It was something I had never experienced before. But yeah, so I've been, but I had a lot of the poems translated for me into Russian. And then because I can read, but I'm not very good. So a professor friend of mine, she would read in Russian and I would read in English.
Oh, fascinating, fascinating. In general, I found that Europeans, that whole, tend to respect poetry.
Oh, you're
get
you're,
much
yeah.
more passionate about
yeah.
it. At least in the day when I was young, it seemed like when a poetry book came out, it just sold.
It was
like
gone.
Hotcakes.
Yeah.
It was gone.
I think my former chair in the English department used to joke that I'm a rock star over there. I may not be anybody here, but I'm a rock star over there.
So let's talk about your event at Kazoo Books. Tell us about that.
That is going to be on April 1, April Fool's Day, if anyone doesn't remember. And it's at 1 o'clock. The Parkview, it's on Parkview, right off of Oakland. And I will be reading quite a number of poems from this book, and I believe there will be refreshments to follow. I do have another reading
ethnic
coming
type
up.
Of a
no, probably not. I would have to talk somebody into cooking. Well, we do have a festival, you know, every year, Russian festival
in
November.
Yeah, you organize that, don't you?
I'm involved in that. This year it will be November 18, and we do we have the chefs at Fetzer Center sort of trained to make Russian food, so we have food and music and academics and lectures and readings and. It's amber for sale and all kinds of things. So that's coming up way far in the future, but it'll be here soon.